This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Brittany Patterson. This morning, we learn about a family-owned black newspaper in Virginia. The publisher, Claudia Whitworth, is rejecting the idea that people only want to hear negative stories.
Every front page of his paper would have murders, rapes, something. And I said, why on earth would you do something like this when that's what people think of us anyhow? And he said, because good news doesn't sell.
Her paper is still going strong and just celebrated its 80th anniversary. That and more on this West Virginia Morning. In the latest episode of Inside Appalachia, we learn about a newspaper which is still thriving after 80 years. The Roanoke Tribune is a family-owned African-American newspaper. Back in early March, as the pandemic was just starting to unfold, reporter Mason Adams went to see the newspaper's staff in action and learn about how they've survived all these years.
Wednesday nights are the busiest part of the week at the Roanoke Tribune. That's the day that 4,500 copies of the weekly paper show up from the printer. It's all hands on deck as the staff gathers the fold, label, and stack each paper so that they can go to the post office before the day's last mail run. The Roanoke Tribune isn't just a community paper. It's a family paper, owned and operated by a family that's been doing this for four generations. And three generations are here this evening. Claudia Shaw is the youngest to have picked up the family business.
Probably started about five or six folding papers.
Her mother, Eva Shaw Gill, started working at the paper as a child too.
Most kids have chores to wash dishes and make up their bed. We had to come to the Tribune.
Then there's Stan Hale, Eva's older brother.
Stan the man. They say you look like a machine when you get started.
Stan's the paper's spark plug, and he's really fast at folding papers.
Been everything, worn all the hats from time to time. Been here since, I started when I was about 11 years old.
In the eye of the storm stands publisher Claudia Whitworth, age 92. Claudia, spelled with a C, or C. Laudia to distinguish her from her granddaughter, K. Laudia, started in the newspaper business in 1945. She bought the paper from her father in 1971 and continues to publish today. Her philosophy? To shine a positive light on Roanoke's black community.
Always the positive. I said no negatives. It's like a letter from home.
Claudia's focus on positivity has occasionally brought her into conflict with her peers in the publishing industry. She remembers going to a national conference of black-owned and operated newspapers several years ago and getting into a debate with a tabloid publisher from the West Coast.
And I had to question him. I said, every front page of his paper would have murders, rapes, something. And I said, why on earth would you do something like this when that's what people think of us anyhow? You know, I challenged him in the national conference, and he said, because good news doesn't sell. And I said, okay, I'm going to prove you wrong. And none of them exist. Every one of them are out of, and my little good news don't sell is still out here and hadn't missed an issue.
Claudia's father, the Reverend F.E. Alexander, founded the Roanoke Tribune in 1939. Claudia went to work there 6 years later, but she quickly grew frustrated, partly because her father limited what she could do because she was a woman. So she started a pattern of moving to work on black newspapers elsewhere, then coming back home. That's how she learned the business. Claudia vividly remembers the joy she found in the physical process of setting type and arranging letters onto the page. When she started out, that process involved arranging molten lead alloys in a linotype machine. When they cooled, they'd form slugs that would be used to press ink onto newsprint paper.
You dump all of it in, and you put the fire under, and it all melts, and then the dirt all floats to the top. And I had a thing that you skim the dirt off, and that just pure metal, just shiny as new, every week. And it just had sort of a spiritual thing to it, how you can skim that dirt off and just be pure again.
They look like gold bars. They were just
so I loved it. I loved everything about it.
Claudia worked at newspapers in Dayton, Cleveland, Columbus, Ohio, and in New York City. But she never forgot where she came from.
Well, my intention was always to come back and take care of my own paper, but I just needed experience.
Claudia took full control of the Roanoke Tribune in 1971 when she bought it from her father. She since has forged a powerful legacy with the Roanoke Tribune. For the nearly 30% of Roanokers who identify as African American, the Tribune serves as a positive reflection of their community. She's kept it going, even through a time when newspapers around the country are struggling to stay in business.
Well, she's a force of nature. That's exactly what she is. She's a larger-than-life personality. She is a very driven woman. She always has been.
That's Reginald Sharif, a political science professor at Radford University, who grew up in Roanoke and literally wrote the book on the city's black history. The Tribune has been a consistent presence his entire life.
Yeah, well, I don't know when I don't remember it because we received a subscription at home, and it was a way for everybody in Roanoke to keep up with what was going on in the black community, but also for those who had moved away. So at a time when many African-American people felt invisible in our communities, those black newspapers, both locally and nationally, kept us informed.
And it kept readers informed, even during difficult periods. Beginning in the 1950s, Roanoke City government demolished dozens of neighborhoods blocks to make way for a new interstate, civic center, and other redevelopment. Urban renewal also destroyed much of Roanoke's Black Business District, a longtime cultural hub that had attracted touring jazz musicians, as well as pioneering filmmaker Oscar Micheaux. The Roanoke Tribune was located there, too. Claudia remembers how she learned that the Tribune was being torn down.
My phone rings at 8 o'clock in the morning. They said, do you know they bulldozed in the Tribune? They bulldozed the Tribune and everything.
All the equipment
over that night. I come there, my stuff is all in the sidewalk and everything. They had bulldozed everything.
Even through all that, Claudia never missed an issue. She had kept photo-setting equipment at home, and so was able to keep publishing, even after her building was destroyed. The Roanoke Tribune persisted, moving to its current location on Melrose Avenue. They've adopted new technology over the years, too, incorporating computers and publishing not only in print, but online. It takes an iron will and high standards to keep a newspaper going, especially through all that. You can see that in how Claudia has raised her children and grandchildren.
One thing she's always been on me about is my grammar, and how I speak,
she's on
how I walk, my posture.
Everybody about that.
No, oh, yeah.
Everybody about that. It's old school.
Remember I told you I moved away. I was gone for 15 years, and I used to write my mom letters every week.
I'd edit them.
And when I get home, she has all my letters marked. Circle.
Edited.
Mm-hmm. So I said, instead of her being happy to hear from me, I got to see all of this pile of mail edited. You should have said this. You should have.
You didn't could have that used correctly. That word. Yes, your past participles.
Oh, Lord.
The Roanoke Tribune carries on, even as the novel coronavirus pandemic shut down most of America. But the Tribune is still going, it's still publishing. It survived Jim Crow laws. It survived the destruction of its building during urban renewal. And now it's surviving the pandemic and the death of print. What's its secret? I think the answer can be found on Wednesday nights, when the staff gathers to process papers and deliver them to their community. This isn't just a newspaper. It's a family. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Mason Adams in Roanoke, Virginia.
To hear more from this episode of Inside Appalachia, go to wvpublic.org or find it wherever you get your podcasts. It's no secret, abortion is a highly polarized issue, and it's something WVPB's program Us and Them addressed last November in an episode called Abortion Divides. Last week, that program was honored with an award from the Public Media Journalists Association. In the episode, host Trey Kay speaks with West Virginians about this emotionally charged subject. While reporting the story, Trey witnessed heated exchanges between protesters and supporters of abortion rights. It made him wonder if abortion is a subject that's become too hot to handle, and if it's possible for people to speak civilly about their differences. Here's an excerpt from that Us and Them program.
I sat down with two women who are experts. For years, they've been working against each other's interests at the West Virginia State Capitol. But they have a reputation for being open to conversation with the other side.
I'm Margaret Chapman Pomponio, CEO of West Virginia Free, Advocates for Reproductive Health, Rights, and Justice.
I'm Karen Cross, Political Director for National Right to Life.
Karen's been in Washington, D.C. for 14 years now. But she started out as a lobbyist for West Virginians for Life. That's when she and Margaret found themselves at the state capitol on opposite sides of the abortion issue.
I got involved in this issue after having had two abortions.
Karen says she had an abortion before her senior year in high school. And later, after she was mother to a young daughter, she had her second abortion when she was 23.
My life changed again after that abortion. I began to drink more heavily to try to numb the feelings. And after about 3 years, I started having nightmares, and I decided to start. I just felt like we needed something in Morgantown. This is in Morgantown, West Virginia. And I felt like we needed something for girls and women who were pregnant unexpectedly, unplanned or whatever, in crisis, and that we could offer them help. Whatever their need was, I just wanted to have the community fill that need. And so we started a pregnancy center in 1984 in Morgantown. And in fact, at that very first meeting, they showed a video of abortion, and I remember crying, and everyone else was crying too, but I was crying because I knew I had done that. And I remember thinking I would die if anybody knew what I had done. And at the end of that meeting, I volunteered to help with girls and women, and to help set it up and to be the treasurer on the board. And I said, I'll do anything at all to help women and their babies. Just don't ask me to get involved in politics. That kind of changed over time.
Margaret, the CEO of West Virginia Free, says she also became aware of abortion in high school. That's when one of her friends got an abortion. In college, she supported another friend who wanted to end her unintended pregnancy.
Also, at the time, my political consciousness was really peaking. You know, I was learning about the civil rights movement for the first time, and all of these issues around fairness and justice were kind of crashing down on my shoulders. And so I became an activist for social justice and organized Gunnison, Colorado's first pro-choice march and rally with some other students, and went on to study public policy and political science for my graduate work in Bellingham, Washington. I ended up coming back to West Virginia. This organization named West Virginia Free needed a lobbyist. I absolutely had no intentions of being a lobbyist. I didn't know anything about, you know, I remember being at the Capitol and just thinking that I had been thrown into the lion's den. You know, they needed a lobbyist. I was supportive of the issue. And then I just learned the process as I went, which you probably did too, Karen.
I did, absolutely. Yeah. I knew nothing about lobbying. And in fact, when I started, you know, it was after about a year after I helped organize the pregnancy center that I took the job at West Virginians for Life. And they had to tell me what a PAC was. I didn't know what a PAC was.
You have both said that, you know, it was trial by fire. You didn't expect to be lobbyists. Margaret, you said you felt like you were thrown into the lion's den. And so I guess I'm wanting to know, when you two engaged each other at the Capitol during legislative sessions, I mean, was it contentious? Did you connect with each other in a way where you got strident and angry with one another?
Go
ahead, Karen.
Well, first of all, I like Margaret. But I believe that being pro-life means loving people and treating them with respect. That's a part of being pro-life. And so I treat the legislators who don't agree with me on the issue the same. I treat people with respect. I try to, at least. It's not always easy, but I believe that that's what we're supposed to do. So.
What about you, Margaret?
Yeah, I'm finding this really interesting because this is the first time that Karen and I have
been asked these kinds of questions, yeah. and I'm seeing a lot more commonality, which I understand maybe is the point of the show. but that is what I always say when people ask me, like, what really drives me in this work? And it's a sense of compassion and love and equity. And so, I like people and I like Karen. I mean, we have had strong disagreements, but we always met them with, I think, mutual respect for each other.
We've been listening to an excerpt of the Us and Them episode, Abortion Divides. You can download Us and Them wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at wvpublic.org. This episode of Us and Them is presented with support from the West Virginia Humanities Council. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. I'm your host and producer this morning, Brittany Patterson. Thanks for listening.